You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters Live. Welcome to the podcast, which showcases innovations, the big ideas and the visionaries in the food industry. We like to dig deep and we like to look to the future and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer. I'm a TV presenter and a gastronaut. Now, it's estimated that 120,000 square kilometres of land are lost to the desert each year. And with that goes the loss of capacity to grow food. It's a global problem, but it's especially acute in places like the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, already on the front line of climate extremes. So what can be done about it? Well, today we're looking at two food-related Expo Live global innovators at Expo 2020. Both are part of the race to reclaim land from the desert and use it for agriculture. So could they possibly set an example for the rest of the world? You might be sceptical, but let me tell you, watermelons are being grown in the desert around Dubai as we speak. So with me to reveal more are Dr. Dionysia Angeliki Lira, Halo Fight agronomist at the International Centre for Biosaline Agriculture in Dubai and commonly known as Sissy. Hello there, Sissy.
Hello, Stefan. Great to be present here for this great podcast.
It's fantastic to have you. And secondly, we have Atle Idland, co-founder and managing director at Desert Control Middle East. Hello there, Atle.
Hello, Stefan. It's a pleasure to be here. I look forward to this.
Excellent. Okay, so well, let's just start off by looking at the concept of as a whole. So desertification is an issue in many parts of the world. Dionysia, or Sissy rather, can you give us a sense of scale of this? And can you set out what makes the UAE particularly vulnerable?
Yeah, so we all are familiar that the global temperatures are rising and that the human population is expanding. So more and more, the planet is becoming vulnerable to desertification. Actually, desertification affects approximately 1/6 of the world's population and 70% of all dry lands and 1/4 of the total land area. Although land degradation has occurred throughout the history, the pace has accelerated, reaching 30 to 35 times the historical rate, according to the United Nations statistics. Regarding UAE, we have to consider that 80% of the land is desert area, and the desertification in UAE is mainly driven by wind erosion, salinization, water logging, vegetation loss, expansion of built-up areas, excavation, and landfilling.
So it's not just the question of there being desert, but it's an increasing problem, it sounds like. And is this related to the UAE's food security? Because presumably the UAE hasn't traditionally grown a vast amount of food anyway. So is this a question of individual country security, or is it simply about growing enough food?
UAE has traditionally grown. As we know, date palm is considered one of the biggest food production items in the region, in UAE and in the region overall. Of course, there are some other crops that have been considered based on the food security agenda and been deployed to be grown in more controlled environments, like, for example, tomato, cucumber, cabbage, cauliflower, pepper, different kind of vegetables and leafy greens in order to support the food security portfolio in UAE.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, Atle, let's look at the exciting projects that you're already working on in a second. First of all, let's get our hands dirty to talk about the soil itself. Can you explain how and why the climate of the UAE transforms and degrades the soil? Presumably this must be something that has been going on for years anyway. Why is it different now?
Well, this is over time, over a long, long time. I mean, the soils in the UAE are currently very sandy soils, and they have a low water holding capacity. And what we have invented as a desert control is kind of a liquid natural clay solution. So we're kind of adding clay structures and clay minerals into the soils. And clay minerals has always been, for centuries, the ideal agriculture soil solution. So that's what we're adding. But here you see already that the soils, they're not arid. They have a low water holding capacity, and the salinity is definitely also a problem.
Okay. So if you can talk a little bit about the project you're working on at the moment, how does it unfold? It must be, I mean, you can't just helicopter in a field into the middle of the desert, can you? There must be a huge amount of other stages that are involved. How does it work?
Well, if I can speak about the liquid natural clay solution that we provide, and we have been working very closely with Dr. Sissi and the International Center for Biosaline Agriculture now for about two and a half years. So we've been testing out both the agricultural crops and also the landscaping areas. But this really started back in 12 years ago in Egypt, where they were trying to dig down manually clay into the ground. And of course, that is a very tedious process, and it's not very uniform. So our founder and inventor, he invented a liquid solution of this. And now, 12 years later, we are deploying it throughout the UAE, both in the agriculture sector and in the landscaping and also the reforestation, to make the sandy soils in the Middle East into fertile, water-holding capacity, even to keep the nutrients in the soil. Because the soils here are kind of leaching the water, leaching the nutrients. So you need different solutions to be able to do agriculture in these environments.
What's the scale of the operation, Atle? Is it? I mean, it sounds very resource intensive. Is it expensive? Is it absolutely transformational for the soil? And once you've done it, have you created something that will remain sort of arable for a significant amount of time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, since we are a liquid, it's very easy and non-intrusive to apply. So we just spray it on, or we inject it in for palm trees, for example, or date palm trees, as Sissi mentioned. We will use an injection method. On other areas, we would just spray it on, and the percolation by gravity by itself would percolate down to the root zone of the different crops that you are growing. And based on our 12 years of experience now, we see that the one application in the agriculture sector would definitely last for 3 years or more. And after 3 years, you would come in with a booster shot, which is popular to say now, that will last for another 3 years.
And in what way does this transform the soil? I mean, can you produce pretty much any crops in it? Or are there variations with the way that it's applied that work with different crops?
It all starts with the soil properties and the soil analysis. And based on the soil analysis and the properties of the different soils, we will formulate the liquid natural clay to fit that particular purpose. Yeah. Also in combination with the crops that you want to grow. So there are many, many factors that you need to consider. But now I think we have created a kind of a food basket in the UAE with 15, 16 different agricultural crops that we have grown in the past 2 to 3 years, with an average of 30 to 50% water irrigation savings, and even increased yields from 16 to 60%. We've been very happy to work along with ICBA and Dr. Sissi on these projects as well.
And which crops is this most appropriate for? I would imagine that high volume, low value crops like wheat are not particularly appropriate, but you can correct me. Do you stick to high value crops, or is it across the board?
It is really across the board. I mean, wheat and grain and pearl millet, we did that with ICBA as well. And we came out with, if I'm not wrong, Sissi, I think it was 36% increased yields with pearl millet with half the water. And we came out with more than 60% more zucchini with half the irrigation water needed.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? So, Sissi, for you, which are the main target crops for technologies like this? What is it, a question of what will help more? Is it the question of economic benefits? What are the priorities?
For my research and for the project that we ran through the Expo Live Innovation Grant Program funding, it was actually to utilize the saline water, not the fresh water, which is the target for Adle and the Desert Control Company. Mm-hmm. From our end, we are looking into how we can utilize degraded water and land, low quality actually, water and soil, to grow these special highly salt tolerant crops, highly salt tolerant plants or salt loving plants, the so-called halophytes, for different uses, mainly for food and feed. Of course, in areas where the salinity is not to such a high level. Of course, we can focus on salt-tolerant varieties of conventional crops, which already exist. So we can have salt-tolerant varieties of potato, cabbages, lettuce, carrot, whatever. However, this special group of halophytes that can be grown even with seawater in some cases, it's really interesting and challenging to explore for food security purpose in a desert environment.
Wow, what grows in seawater?
Some halophytes, for example, like Salicornia, the one that I have been intensively working on for the last 9 years now. Mm-hmm. So this is a crop that in the natural ecosystem, it grows next to the sea. Mm-hmm. It can be used mainly for human consumption at the fresh vegetative stage, and at an advanced vegetative stage, green stage, it can be used as feed. And of course, because the Salicornia seeds have high oil content, can be explored for oil extraction and production. So for the project, we tapped into looking and utilizing the reject brine from desalination. And why desalination? Because desalination units are abundant in Middle East, the North Africa region. And out of the desalination process, there is a hypersaline byproduct water that is produced, which is called the reject brine. Just to consider that 70%, which is translated to 100 million cubic meters per day, are produced in Middle East and North Africa region. And this refers to both seawater and inland desalination units. Mm-hmm. So this is translated into huge water source to be utilized for such crops and such kind of approach.
So I guess the potential for it is huge.
Yes, correct. Of course, we have to be mindful in terms of we are using the reject brine to irrigate Salicornia and relevant halophytes in the open field. We have to be mindful of the salinity build up. In the soil. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are different kinds of methods to manage the salinity, like leaching fractions or drainage systems. Definitely, we are considering such systems to be more implementing next to the sea. This is why we're talking about coastal farms with such crops, exactly to serve this dual purpose of uses for humans and for as food and feed.
Now, Dubai is a wealthy country. What is the driver for this? Is it about food security? Is it about the independence of the country and trying to rely on its workforce? Is it a social issue of jobs and building a tradition in farming? What's the main driver for the research?
The main driver definitely is to increase and to strengthen the food security portfolio in UAE. Food, feed, nutrition, income, all these come together. We have to consider that UAE is heavily dependent on imported food. More than 85-90% of the food is brought to UAE from abroad. Mm. So by focusing on how we can increase the local food production is very vital for the country. Although UAE managed amazingly well during the COVID lockdown, but I think what COVID really brought in the surface are these gaps in the food security dimension in many countries. Mm. I don't know how much extreme is going to be in the near future, considering all these rapid kind of phenomenon that take and extreme phenomena that take place and pandemics, whatever. Such kind of approaches and interventions are very much vital for the countries that are really devastated and are really considered as marginal in terms of climatic conditions.
Hello there, only me. I just wanted to break into the conversation to say that if you're enjoying this episode, then once it's finished, you might want to check out our series on low and no alcohol drinks. We cover the art and science of flavour, the role of functional ingredients, and the future of the sector. Just go to foodmatterslive.com and search low and no. Now, back to the chat. So Adelaide, now thinking about farmers and the amount of time that they need to establish sustainable methods, is what you're doing, would you say that it's sustainable or is it transformative mainly? You know, if you need to reapply every 3 years, would you say that there's a sustainable aspect to it? And presumably there is a cost as well, which has to be passed on to the food. And you're battling that against the social and economic costs of importing food. How do you balance those different issues? I know that they're very separate issues, and some are moral and some are economic, but how do you balance them? What's the most important issue?
No, I think Dr. Sissi pointed it out right now that the pandemic was really a wake-up call for the food security. Mm. And when the pandemic broke out, I mean, the UAE took really actions about this, because importing 90% or more of your food is not sustainable. Yeah. Mm. So they needed to put more efforts into this. So the Minister of Food Security, now the current Minister of Climate Change and Environment, she has really done a fantastic job in kind of looking into different technologies that could help produce food locally, both human food and animal feed, as Dr. Sissi says. And these initiatives are now coming rapidly. Yeah. And if you look at what we are trying to do, we are doing open field, not greenhouses, or we're even doing greenhouses with sandy soils, but we're doing open field cultivation, meaning that this would potentially be a large scale production. Because if you look at greenhouses, or you look at aquaculture or aquaponics or whatever, of course, they have merit, and we need all these solutions to function in this region. But on scale, you need large areas. So if we can be one of the solutions or part of the solutions to turn the large desert sandy areas into fertile soil, food production will increase. I cannot say how many percent, but they definitely make a big impact and big difference. This has both an economic and a social impact. And if you look at this from a larger perspective, not just the UAE by itself, but in the world, 12 million hectares of fertile soil is being degraded every year. That's an enormous pace. Mm. It's an enormous area of land. And if this trend continues globally, we will only have 60 more harvests on this planet, 60 more years. The loss of biodiversity of 12 million hectares of land per year, that's just crazy. It's enormous. And if you look at it from a weight point of view or mass point of view, it's the same as losing 25 million African elephants a year in biomass.
So can you give us some idea, Atle, of the, I mean, presumably, I mean, there is a cost element in doing the work that you do. Is there any way that you can tell us how much that adds to the cost of producing crops? I know that you said there's quite a range of benefits for different crops, but presumably it adds a cost. Does that counter the cost of importing food, for instance?
No, absolutely not, because we are turning non-productive land into productive land. And then you can look at it from different ways. Okay, what's the value of a farmable land versus a non-farmable land? Yeah. At the same time, we have two major benefits. One is the irrigation water savings from 30 to 50%. And then you have the crop increase, yield increase. But the most important thing is not even the one or two that I just mentioned. It's the third one. And that is the value, the alternative value of the water you have saved that can go into food security and to agriculture. So if I save, for example, 50% or 30% on a landscaping area for trees and shrubs and lawn areas and whatever, I can take that available water or the saved water and put it into the agriculture sector. Yeah. So just to give you one example, if I save 30% of a 50-hectare landscaping area in Dubai or in Abu Dhabi, I can take that water and I can produce 50,000 tons of tomatoes per year.
It's a fundamental shift, isn't it?
It is a fundamental shift. It has a lot of impacts. It has a lot of impacts.
Yeah. So, Sissi, let's talk about a slightly different issue. Now, sometimes these things haven't necessarily worked that well in Dubai. So there was a tree planting initiative that was in the news. A million trees were planted and the vast majority of them died. Do issues like this worry you?
Definitely. As a researcher, you know, and as a scientist, we definitely face challenges in because we have, in the bottom line, we have to make the desert green. I mean, I cannot, and of course, coming from Greece, where everything is lush green, they are coming to a desert climate to work here. I don't think an agronomist can face such a biggest challenge to make a barren land desert.
You've been ambitious with your scope here, haven't you?
Exactly. But but the challenge is always, and, you know, for the human beings, when we set targets, always the targets is a bar to overcome. This is why many teams are working on desert climates, are working on salinity tolerance, on drought tolerance, on different kind of challenges that agriculture is facing, like Adlin and his team, like ICBA, like so many other organizations that are really working on such harsh climates, on desert areas, focusing on such challenging issues about agriculture. The challenges are there for sure, but with good teamwork and good leadership, we can overcome such kind of challenges.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about that sense of it, the teamwork. So the scale of the challenge is huge. It's a global problem. 1.5 billion people directly dependent on land. That is being degraded. Do you think, Adelaide, that countries are working together enough? And can you tell us a little bit more about the point of your involvement with Expo 2020? Is it about sharing knowledge or is it about showing off about how great you are to make your company earn some more cash?
No. I must say, Expo 2020 and the program Expo Live that both Sissy and I have been a part of is probably one of the most impressive programs that I've seen, been part of in my career. And they are definitely doing their part to bringing technologies, bringing people together, bringing innovations together, and bringing awareness to this problem. So I must say that Expo 2020, Expo Live, has really made our business here in a large extent, and I'm very proud to be part of that family. It's not about profit, it's about awareness, it's about solving a global problem and doing it together. So both from a humanitarian point of view, from a technology point of view, and from a sustainability point of view.
Now, Sissy, what we're really looking at is, I think as you've both described really well, it's a group of problems, and therefore there are a group of solutions that are needed. Is there anything in particular that would really help the whole chain of events? Robotics in the field, more AI, blockchain technology. Is there anything else that you think really needs to develop at the same pace as the work that you're doing?
Definitely. I think one of the dimensions and approaches that is already playing a vital role in accelerating actually the impact of such kind of projects is artificial intelligence, of definitely the genomics. Through molecular studies, we can, for example, have good varieties that can really perform well under such harsh conditions. Through IT technologies, we can have smart applications, for example, so that we can accelerate the information provided to the stakeholders, like farmers, to the end users. Because in the bottom line, we are all working for the farmers. We want the farmers to have the appropriate tools for them to operate in the best way so that the humanity can be fed. So definitely all these tools and approaches and directions are very much needed to be embedded in strategic planning of agriculture on national and international level.
Yeah, and as we have talked about before, Sissy, is that, education and knowledge is definitely a key. And that combined with a kind of a smart precision agriculture practices with sensors, with data, with AI, with machine learning, this is needed to optimize. Because currently, I would say there is a bit of waste of water and resources because they are kind of irrigating based on tradition, based on what they believe is right. But you can definitely be more precise if you introduce these other tools and other technologies.
So that's a really interesting concept, isn't it? I mean, education is key, especially in somewhere like the UAE, where there is a huge migrant workforce and presumably not a vast depth of knowledge in agriculture, because traditionally there very little was possible. So that must be an uphill struggle, mustn't it?
Yes, I agree to some extent. This is why through this Expo Live project and other projects as well, we are focusing on developing smart applications for farmers to utilize and build their capacity and build their knowledge and information on the proper soil and water management in terms of salinity, for example, in terms of applying the proper farming technologies. And also at the same time, and specifically through the Expo Live project, we established the Halofit in a very successful activity that really has received much attention from the public. It's called the Halofitic Kitchen Lab Program, where we look into raise public awareness of the consumers about desert farming, about halophytes consumption, about the nutritional benefits, about sustainable consumption habits, sustainable eating. So we have chefs, we have nutritionists, we are a big team on board, having students. So far, we have run more than 34 sessions so far, more than 400 participants considering the COVID restrictions for gatherings and events. So such kind of interventions and activities are very much needed in UAE, in a similar kind of environment, exactly to increase the knowledge and open the mindsets of the local communities on the potential of different kind of activities and technologies that might be implemented.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, my last question is for both of you, really. Let's start with you, Atle. Obviously, your work sounds enormously important and it seems to be doing incredibly well, which is very exciting. But what about the rest of the world? Are there other projects which give you a lot of hope that we might succeed in managing agriculture in difficult conditions?
100%. And I would point out that the Great Green Wall Project in the Sahel region in Africa, going from Senegal to Djibouti, is probably the most interesting, most exciting, impactful project that's going on in the world right now.
Can you give us a very, very brief description of it?
Yeah, it's a green wall, 8,000 kilometers going from Senegal in the west to Djibouti in the east. It's all about regeneration of arid lands into agriculture, to greenery, to tree planting, but it has so many more other aspects. It's about food security, it's about stopping the migration our people, because they cannot live there without having, what to say, green areas or food or whatever. And it's about everything, I would say. Now, a decade since it started 10 years ago, they're only 15% there. But it has raised from the UN and from world stakeholders, I think it's about $20 billion, and it's continuing. So, I mean, we have been invited to take part in this as well. We're not ready yet because we don't have the capacity to do it, but we will definitely do it when we are ready. But this is an enormous project. And when it's finished, it'll be the biggest, largest living structure on Earth. It's three times the size of the Great Barrier Reef as a living organism or living area on the Earth. So it's just amazing. It's just amazing.
Very exciting. And Sissy, are projects that you find very inspiring?
I should say also the NEOM project, which is going to take place in Saudi Arabia. In general, some sustainable cities that embed agriculture and urban farming technologies in. Because we have to think about that the future is about how we can become more self-sufficient in whatever environment we live. So we can imagine ourselves, I mean, growing groceries on the garden, in our balconies, or on the rooftop of the building. So such kind of community garden projects or sustainable cities or whatever similar projects are very much interesting and I think there will be much more expansion in the future.
Excellent. Well, thank you to both of you for your extraordinary expertise. And I really look forward to seeing how all of this unfolds. So Denicia, Angeliki Lira and Atle Idland, thank you so much for joining me. Now, I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Table Talk podcast. We've got hundreds more at foodmatterslive.com. For instance, if you go to the site and search why we need to talk about soil degradation, you'll find an episode about an issue the UN has described as being as important as climate change. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And thank you so much for listening.